Hey everybody, this is Alex Merced from alexmerced.com. Just, you know, another libertarian dude who talks about libertarian stuff on another libertarian podcast. What I'm going to talk about today, this is my first podcast since the election. I didn't do one right after the election because I wanted to kind of give time for stuff to settle and kind of see what the results are and sort of what the new, what expectations should be. And now, I know there's a lot of people who are thrilled or not thrilled with election outcomes, who, you know, are a lot of people, you know, I'll get back into, like, the, you know, the allegations of, like, fraud and things like that later in the podcast. First, I want to, but at the end of the day, like, the count has happened. Now, yes, the election is not, these counts are not certified yet, which means they're not 100% official. No electors have convened to do the election of the president. But we know enough about the count that we know what happened. Okay, we kind of know what the new government looks like. And going into this, you kind of expected one or two things. You expected this sort of big groundswell for Biden that was going to end up in this big blue wave. That was kind of the thing everyone was expecting. So you were going to have a blue Senate, a blue Congress, and a blue executive. And the other alternative was, like, Donald Trump retains re-election, the Senate, you know, and generally everything stays the way it was these last 4 years for the most part. Like, I don't think anyone expected gains for the Republicans in the Senate because it was mostly Republican Senate seats up for re-election. And I don't think anyone expected much change for the Democrats in the Congress because it just wasn't expected. You actually end up kind of getting the, if you think about the government as a whole, okay, you never generally want one party to have too much power because then they start, when they get more power, they don't do the things that help people. Like, they don't, like, suddenly, like, oh, we have all this power, let's do the good stuff. They generally rush to do the bad stuff first, okay? And now, yes, they theoretically, when they have power, they have the power to undo bad things, but they generally don't do that. They don't do the good things. They just do the bad things, okay? Because generally, these are things that oftentimes have sort of the most broad appeal. They fall into one or two categories. The other thing that has, like, the most broad appeal, so everyone likes the idea, even though it's a bad idea, because it sounds nice. Or it's something that, like, it's financially good for the party. So there's a lot of donors for the party. So they push it because there's a lot of money behind it. Okay? And at the end of the day, these large, giant machine, political duopoly machines, they're a business at the end of the day. They're always focusing on sort of the next donation that funds them all staying in office and enjoying their, for the most part, cushy political jobs. So in that regard, you generally don't want either party to have much more power. Everyone always imagines, like, what they would, ideal world would do, but they never do that. So ideal world is, and it's not that ideal, is that you have a divided government that just does as little bad stuff as possible. They'll still do bad things, but do less bad things. And in that regard, the election actually turned out in the best way you could hope for a divided government, but also with a less polarized country going forward. Because, I mean, whether you like the policies of the last 4 years or not, there's no denying just sort of the spirit of Donald Trump just really was feeding into a lot of the way he responded to things was just really feeding into being such a catalyst for, like, just division and resentment towards each other. And it's not like that's just going to heal overnight or any, like, right away, but at least it's, that is kind of been limited. Like, Trump's not going anywhere. Trump's still going to be a political figure. If any, one of the things that we did see in this election is that Trump has staying power. Okay, and we'll parse those results a little bit more because, again, there was the two potential realms, and those, the two sort of probable things that people expected were both kind of bad. So, like, a blue wave, like Biden for president, Senate, blue Congress, that's bad because, again, one party would have too much power. They would just do a bunch of bad stuff. And then plus, such a strong vote in that direction would basically be a signal to them to do the bad things, that it would make them feel like people are voting for their policies. They weren't just voting against, like, they didn't like the sort of negative cultural shift of the last 4 years. Which a lot of people who like lower, like, I like lower taxes. I, and there was things I liked about the Trump presidency in the sense I like lower taxes. I like the deregulation. I liked a lot of that stuff. But there was also this, like, there was also all this stuff about immigration. Just all sort of like really weird foreign policy choices. Far as like who to be nice to, who not to be nice to, when to sort of be hands off, when to be hands on. Like, it was kind of all over the place. And again, just the overall just sort of political culture created that really made politics a hyper, like, politics is always divisive, don't get me wrong, but it was hyper divisive these last 4 years, more so than I can think of during any time. And it's not just Donald Trump's fault, but he didn't do anything to kind of like push against that happening. Okay, like, there's a difference, like, if people are trying to use you as a focal point for division for their own political ends, which, you know, to an extent people definitely, you know, at times would exaggerate what Trump said or what Trump did to try to make what these really weird moments more divisive than they otherwise would have been. That definitely was a thing, but he didn't do anything to like mitigate that. If anything, he would just usually bite back and clap down harder. So like, it's just, it was just bad. Okay. And generally, like, that's bad to me, bad judgment. When basically someone is trying to like use your words against you and your response is, let me say more of that and make you make, let's dig my hole deeper, because just to spite you, that's not a good response. But yeah, so people wanted to vote against Trump, but they didn't necessarily want to vote for Democrat policies per se. So I was actually I'm pretty impressed with the voters that they actually voted for a divided government. They actually, like, the Democrats actually lost seats in Congress. Okay, like, that was, no one saw that coming. The Republican maintained the Senate. Now, it's not that I love Republicans or anything, and I want them to pick up seats in Congress. But the idea is that does serve as a check on Biden. Biden cannot do as many bad things with less of a majority in Congress and a Republican majority in the Senate. So that means a lot of people, and the thing is that Biden won by a large margin in the popular vote. So that means people must have voted for Biden, but voted Republican on the bottom. Okay, so this tells us a few things. People weren't necessarily rejecting Republican policies per se. They weren't rejecting necessarily the notion of lower taxes, and probably even some of the Republican policies I don't like. They weren't necessarily outright rejecting that. They just were rejecting Trump as a leader. And so that this creates this sort of interesting thing that, like, the battle policy-wise, the battle, you know, that discussion over what policy should be, that sort of populist Republican Party that Donald Trump has created, is here to stay for a while. Okay, like, I was actually surprised that Donald Trump not only was able to keep the same number of votes that he got the first time around, but was able to actually grow his total vote share. So the Trump, despite everything, was able to, you know, still have a strong showing, which means there is a market for that. And if you think about all the people who, if you read the tea leaves and you read that, hey, people voted Biden but voted Republican on the bottom for the Republicans to pick up Congress seats and maintain the Senate, you know, you are probably still looking at a conservative majority in the popular vote. So at least at this moment in time. So theoretically, you know, if you have a candidate who can somehow be sort of the conservative populist a la Trump, but still sort of be like not repulsive to some of the more right of center vote and more center votes, you can definitely see that it's plausible for Republicans to like come back and then win in 2024, possibly. Okay, like, again, if you're just thinking about like the coalition or what the votes tell you. So that's interesting. Okay, so again, in the realm of what was probable, that's probably the best scenario in 2020, to have a divided government and just start, but yet still have sort of like an end to that sort of weird divisive cycle that was kind of going on between like Donald Trump and the rest of the world. So I'll give credits due far as, again, what was possible and what was probable and what happened. Now let's talk about Jorgensen, because I was actually really impressed with the results, because again, 2020 is not 2016. In 2016, you had two candidates that people didn't like, but they weren't, it wasn't like this like fight for the heart of society like this year was. Like every election is always like the most important election of all time. But in 2016, that was said, but a lot of people didn't feel it. Okay, a lot of people were like, you know what, the system sucks. I want to try something else. So some people thought the system sucks, so they voted for Trump. So Trump won. Some people thought the system sucks, and they're like, screw both parties, and they voted for Johnson. And Johnson got a huge share of the vote relative to previous third-party vote shares. But that was because you had frustration against the system. 2018 and 2020 were not years of that kind of sentiment. It was a very sort of where a lot of people are basically you're with Trump or against Trump type of a feel, type elections. So when you have more binary elections where like the feel of the elections were binary, less people are going to vote, are going to be more marginally willing to vote for an emerging party, okay? And you saw that. You see the Green Party performance this year and pretty much every other emerging party. They did pretty bad this year relative to other years. Yet the Libertarian Party did fairly well, okay? Not better than 2016, but again, different environment. But for the environment, they did pretty well. We did good, okay? I mean, we basically got 1.7 million votes. It's like second highest national vote total of all time, which, you know, is partly because you had a higher turnout, and higher turnout possibly because, you know, you had a lot more flexibility in how you can vote this year. People had a lot more time to vote this year. This is definitely a unique year. But here's the thing. The Libertarian vote is not like, people don't by default vote Libertarian. So if turnout generally goes up, the Libertarian vote share goes down because everyone who votes Libertarian was someone who had to think about it. Like they didn't just been like, yeah, no, I heard of, you know, Jo Jorgensen. She seemed nice. I voted for her. No, you really kind of have to be like, I believe in this person because I know probability is not on my side. My probability is not that this person will win this election. They might. I hope they do. But to me, this vote means something. Okay. So the fact that so many people voted Libertarian, so many people felt that that vote meant something, is a positive sign for the idea of libertarianism and the growth of the Libertarian Party. And not only that, we won several city council seats. We won a state legislature seat in Wyoming. It was overall a good election for libertarians. I mean, this was actually overall a good year as the Libertarian Party. I mean, great membership numbers, higher vote shares across the country. Okay, again, we won a lot of city council races. You know, libertarians, they went out, they campaigned, and they won. We didn't win everything. Of course, you know, if you were running for like national offices like Congress or Senator, you weren't likely to win in the first place. Because you got to build, you know, your local bench first, and then that kind of feeds on up. But we did good, and we did better. Okay, Ricky Harrington got a huge vote share. Okay, in I think that was Arkansas. But very, very good stuff against Tom Cotton. And that was very awesome. Okay. I think the highest, that is, I think now the highest vote total for a U.S. Senate candidate in the Libertarian Party. So that's really cool. So you had a lot of really good things to point at as a Libertarian Party. And on top of that, again, you had so many activists who were really active in the Jorgensen campaign. Like, I wasn't super active this year. I had the career switch. You know, this was sort of a crazy year for me. But I was around, and I was able to see kind of like what was going on behind the scenes. And I can tell you, so many people were working together from all different parts of the party. People who, at other points in time I've seen not get along, they were working together. And they were all unified in supporting the Cohen-Jorgensen ticket, or the Jorgensen-Cohen ticket. And that was awesome. Okay, because that's, it worked out, like, it was, the result is good when you're, by all reasonable measures, okay, and I think we even won a county somewhere, or a couple precincts, so there was stuff that was done well, and the people who were involved in doing all this stuff, they learned, a lot of them are looking to become candidates in the future, they now know how a campaign looks like. This is good, this is very good. So, by all intent. I think this year was a success for the Libertarian Party. And overall, the election was a positive thing. You have a divided government going forward, so that's going to limit the damage they can do. Like, the government's already kind of, like, botched. You know, every government spent so much money this year in 2020 dealing with this whole COVID crisis that they're not going to really have much money to spend going forward. So down the road, as governments realize how budget strapped they are, they're going to have to look at libertarians, look at libertarian ideas. We're the only ones who try to look to solve problems without spending everybody else's money. Okay, we're the only ones who don't feel like we need to blame everyone everywhere else for the problems that are all within our grasp to solve. So it's only a matter of time that people start looking at libertarian ideas. But the numbers show that of all these sort of competing ideas, okay, there's certainly a growing piece there in the Libertarian Party. And again, as I've mentioned in a previous episode, I do think the Libertarian Party will supplant the Republican Party at some point. Because I do think, even though like Trump's coalition is a lot stronger than I expected, which is shown in the election results, I don't think it's a sustainable one. Okay, some parts of the Trump coalition I think jive very well with libertarians and the Libertarian Party. Some really don't. But the thing about the way the Republican coalition is right now is that the parts that don't are fairly sizable, but they're not necessarily growing. They're all these large chunks of the population that have just been around for a long time. If anything, like, there's you have some generational shifts going on, okay? And the problem is the Republicans have this weird balancing game where they have to kind of cater to these very large parts of their coalition, which do push people like libertarians like myself. I just don't feel comfortable in the Republican Party. I've been there. You know, there's just certain things I'm just not comfortable, you know, being okay with, in a sense, far as, you know, immigration policy, far as foreign policy, as far as, you know, sharing a political space, whatnot. It's like different than like when people talk about building coalitions, like I can get along with like left and right libertarians because at the end of the day, the core is libertarian. They might have some differences that they feel very passionate about, but it's a lot different than saying, hey, let's go to war, or let's go, you know, put a bunch of people in cages because of plants they smoked or a line they crossed. So and the same thing with like the Democratic Party, like in the same thing where I just don't feel comfortable with the idea of really sitting there and telling someone that, hey, we're going to crush your business and your dreams and your hopes because, hey, you know, we need to fund X, Y, and Z, and you need to do your part, even though, you know, through your activities, you were bringing jobs and bringing, you know, cool spaces to the local community. But now we're going to put this burden on you. And burying people under paperwork where basically they can't enjoy their businesses, they can't enjoy their communities because they're too caught up in regulatory paperwork to deal with it all. You know, there's just parts of that I can't. In the Libertarian Party, I can be just libertarian. Okay, there are people who I don't see eye to eye on every little thing with, but there's a coalition of people that I can coexist with in that political space to make political change. And there's parts of the Democratic and Republican Party as part of their coalitions that can fit within that space. And I think coexist. And that's kind of what's going to happen over the next 100 years. Okay, coalitions will be redrawn. I mean, the current lines aren't sustainable. Okay, you can't have, you know, outside of basically how districts are drawn, Republicans are able to maintain really structurally a lead in Congress, but that's not going to last forever. You can only draw lines funny so many times, because Republicans do really well in state legislatures, so they have a lot of control in a lot of state legislatures. So, you know, a lot of times the congressional maps are drawn in their favor, and in some blue states they're drawn in Democrats' favor. You know, gerrymandering. But as people are moving around, okay, people are getting less concentrated because now everyone's shifting to working online because of this year. And as that happens, people are going to become more spread out because people don't have to live in New York City. People don't have to live in San Francisco. So why pay the extra cost? So as people get spread more out, it's going to be harder to draw those lines. People are going to start mixing more politically again, okay? Because, you know, you can do it, okay? You know, basically it's going to be more economic advantageous, and it's just going to happen. And as that happens, you're going to have sort of just redrawings of lines over time. It's just going to happen. It's not going to happen quickly. It's not going to happen in the next couple election cycles. So as I kind of mentioned earlier on, you know, there is definitely a room for Republicans to regain the presidency in the next couple elections. You know, if they can find a candidate who can sort of credibly speak to sort of like that, not my favorite message, but that sort of like make America great message that Trump had, can speak credibly to that sort of that legacy, yet still not be quite as have more character. Let's just put it that way. Can show a lot more character than Donald Trump did the last 4 years. If Republicans can do that, they can, you know. And but the problem is, like, it's really hard to find that person who can be sort of credible, charismatic, and credible, and graceful. You know, that's one of the reasons I kind of really liked Ron Paul, why Ron Paul moved me so much, because he was just a kind of kind, personally himself. He was just such a kind guy. Like, that was one of the things that really struck with me. Like, I agreed with his policies, yes. But one of the things that really, really struck a chord with me was just the way he lived his life. The biking, you know, the doing exercise constantly, the being really loyal to his friends, you know, the overall unwaveringness and being polite to his opponents on stage and never being mean to anyone. These were, but yet still always pushing forward. These were things that really inspired me. It's very much why I tried to be a nice guy. To me, like, the example that Ron Paul shows is you can be a nice guy in politics. Okay? Like, yes, a lot of what was awesome about Ron Paul is that he would just say what he thinks when he wants, but he was nice doing it. And no matter how horrible people got, he stayed being nice for the most part. Like, that was, you know, pretty, pretty inspiring. And that definitely, to me, inspired me to just always be nice. And do my best to always be kind. And look, and always try to be optimistic. Like, that's what I took out of, you know, those years supporting Ron Paul. But yeah, that's sort of what I had to say about the election. I think the Libertarian Party has a lot of growth going forward. I think it's an exciting time to be part of the Libertarian Party. Because again, right now, you can be involved in a party that is growing, had a good year. Again, I, you know, if you think this wasn't a good year, I just think you're using the wrong frames of references. And I think a lot of people oftentimes just have too high expectations. You know, but and also when you think about it, like 1.7 million people, that's 1.7 million people who actually thought and actively voted Libertarian. And who knows what? And the thing is that those aren't the only people who got impacted by Libertarian candidates. Libertarian candidates affected people who voted for other parties. Other people saw them. Other people might have been changed. A lot of people, I know when I ran for Senate, people told me like, hey, Alex, I agree with a lot of what you said. You got me to think differently on some issues, but I still had to vote this other way because I was just too scared of Chuck Schumer or, you know, just always been a Democrat or something. But they still were moved or changed based on things that I had said or things that Larry Sharp had said, or, you know, take a look at any candidate's race. You affect more people than just the people who vote for you. Okay? So that's something to also never forget. And if you're one of those people who worked in the Libertarian Party to make that happen this year, your role in that. So that's cool. So going forward, I mean, I got some things to think about, sort of what's going to be my role in all these things going forward. You know, now that I definitely feel like I've kind of gotten into a groove with sort of my new career, and I'm in a comfortable spot where I can start, you know, diverting my time a little bit and not having to be 24/7 and trying to reinventing myself. Because the thing is that, like, again, I changed career, and it wasn't just about, hey, go get a job and do it. When I do something, I want to go all in. So I went all in to be the best software developer I could be and learn as much technology as I could this year and really kind of try to squeeze 5 years worth of experience in a year. And I do think that was successful, that I have built my reputation in my field. you know, earn the respect of my peers. You know, and I did that multiple levels. I mean, there were some points in the Libertarian Party this year where I got to do that there as well. that's a conversation for another time. But overall, this was a good year for me. This was a good year for me where, you know, I got to remind myself of what I have to offer. And still always wanting to make that available and give that people value. And you know, because I'm not going to be around forever. There'll be a day where I'm no longer around. So until then, I got to find ways to give you guys as much as I can, because that's what you leave behind. Not what you took, but what you gave. So that's the deal. But hopefully you guys enjoyed listening to this. And if you made it this far, thank you for listening. But have a great day and enjoy. And those are my thoughts walking from the election. I'm sure there's plenty of other things I'd like to say, and I'm going to think of the minute I stop this podcast. But I'll just subscribe to the podcast. I'm sure I'll hit those things up in future episodes. So enjoy.